We're here at Edinburgh Fringe, and this is somebody who got a great, strong review at Prague Fringe from Fringe Review. And before we dive into the details of that show, I read a book a few years back. I'm talking here to Alan Nashman, called A Nightmare of Reason, which was a biography of Kafka. And what stuck with me from that, having seen so many versions of The Trial and Metamorphosis, was when I worried that these were books and plays about me, they're certainly books and plays at least partly about Kafka, aren't they?
Yeah, that is my favourite biography, Ernst Pavel. Yeah. And he delves into the hidden life of Kafka, his days in school and his evenings with his friends in the cafe, the laughter that he engendered by reading them, The Metamorphosis, a book most people associate with depression, he and his friends found hilarious. There was a quality to Kafka that most of us miss, which is the absurdity that he wrote about was often funny to him.
Yeah.
And in my show, which is based on a letter that he wrote to his father, I try to maintain some of that absurd humor.
Yeah. And that's an interesting thing, because some people have called Godot a nightmare, and others see it as a comedy, of course. And even more horrific to some people is Happy Days, a woman bearing up, and others see it as comedy and laugh at it. And I'm also remembering, this is a very weird parallel to draw, but I have another book called The Great Battle, which was between the letters between Owen Barfield and C.S. Lewis, when the Inklings used to meet, as they were called, Tolkien as well, a group of Oxford, or Cambridge Dons, Oxford Dons, I think, in a pub, laughing aloud as Tolkien read the latest from Lord of the Rings, or, they tried to persuade C.S. Lewis to stop writing this shit about a Christian lion.
Yeah, yes.
And the world of the cafe, which I've always romanticised, was a place of absurdity and laughter. And, these were not people tortured and serious and sitting quietly writing Metamorphosis, were they?
Well, not in the case of Kafka. I can only imagine speaking in Elfish or Hobbit.
High elfish will do.
That is right. What sort of laughter that would engender.
No, but they were talking the language of literature, which wasn't everybody's language.
That's right. And Kafka was, if anything, a man of literature. His friends were writers. They compared works. Now, the difference in Kafka's case is that he was, by and large, a failure.
You've got a glint in your eyes when you say that.
Because that's the heart of my show. He's trying to decipher what the heck went wrong, and he attributes a lot of his self-loathing to his father, who did a fair bit of overt loathing directed at Kafka when he was growing up. That was the style of parenting at the time, one could say, but it did mean that Kafka had a rich kind of litany of recriminations and accusations that he could throw in his father's direction. He stored them up, and at age 36, he spewed them out.
Take me to the moment of creation in this piece. When did you decide, how did you decide, I need to write a piece about Kafka and Kafka's father?
Well, I always found Kafka enticing, and particularly when I was a teenager, I read this letter, and I identified with that sense that the world was absurd, hypocritical, and out to get him. But it was later, after I'd done a piece on Allen Ginsberg, an adaptation of Howl, with a particular director, Mark Cassidy, that he suggested we dramatize this letter, which actually contains a dramatic structure. Throughout the letter, Kafka conjures his father, like Dr. Frankenstein cobbles the monster together. And at the end of the letter, he writes the father's rebuttal to everything he said thus far. And it's the most powerful four pages of that letter, in which he destroys not just every argument he's made, but his very existence.
So I'm still trying to get into the detail. Did you start, as you were reading that, to picture, was it already being born in you, an impulse that I need to do something on the stage about this? Or does that come later? Where does that kind of, that urge come from?
Well, I'm interested in adaptations. I'm interested in literature, painting, music, and finding the dramatic form for these other creative outlets. And because this director had the same curiosity, I suppose we noticed early on that this is inherently dramatic. But it took us 2 years sifting through the letter, meeting weekly, reading all the fiction, interpolating the diary work, other letters, and that we finally found a way to tell this story on the stage. Working closely with the designer as well, finding the elements that were true to this story. We settled on black feathers and cages, dog cages and fences.
And in that spirit of absurdity, I'm going to go absurd too. Did you think if you wandered into a cafe in Prague and just happened to sit at the same table as Kafka and told him your idea, and he knew it was about him, do you think he'd have tried to talk you out of it or said, go for it?
I must say that there are some days when I feel as if he appreciates the levity and the energy that I bring to it. But on most days, I have to admit that I think he'd be appalled that we took one of his private letters, one that was never actually delivered to the father, and we're making hay from it.
So you're just one more person out to get him?
Well, exploiting the hell out of him.
Yeah,
I mean...
Okay, and then how do you take all of that research and actually when does and how does that become a script that then is going to be learned, rehearsed and performed?
As I say, it was a long process of whittling and weaving. Every sentence in the play has been altered, and yet it's all his.
So did this script go into different versions?
There were. There was a question about which episodes from the letter we would use. The entire letter he wrote to his father, 50 pages, would take about 3.5 hours to just read out loud. Our play is 1 hour. So there was obviously a selection process. We had to find the most potent elements. We had to whittle out the other relationships, the mother and the sisters, and focus on the father and son. But through that, we come to some kind of epic battle that relates to authority figures in general.
So as you did that, did you feel a sense of responsibility towards the real person, or did you just go, screw that?
I do feel a responsibility to Kafka. This letter that he wrote to his father is like his autobiography, because he recounts elements of his actual youth that are not available anywhere else. It's a very precious document, and I wanted to honor his intent, let's say, in revealing this story. Not nearly as widely as he probably intended, but I'm hopeful that he'd have a few chuckles watching this play.
Just give us a flavor of the rehearsal room.
Well, the designer was bringing in elements, barbed wire, driftwood, marbles. I would play with them. The director was encouraging me to examine my own shame and fear and powerlessness. At the same time, I play the father. So I examined the grandeur, you know, the self-important elements of myself. And you know, over time... we just settled into these characters, but the rehearsal room was a very playful and creative zone.
And in terms of then how that gets realized on stage, literally, with one of our reviewers this year played Bill Clinton a couple of years ago in a show called Bill Clinton Hercules, and of course there is an enormous amount of, you know, even now, live footage of him as well as recorded visual images in the media and so on. Kafka, I don't know enough about, but I guess there's not much. There's certainly visual images. I don't know whether there's any audio or anything like that was around, and even less of the father. So, you know, where does impersonation come in? Where does portrayal or rendition come in? Mm-hmm. And when do you just take some artistic license and you decide?
Mm-hmm. What Kafka left us was an incredible legacy of personalized fiction. he casts himself in the center of even his short stories. The characters are named in a way that's so similar to him that you can't deny the identification. So I feel like those are portraits. They're not video, but they're very instructive. He also left us drawings. He was a phenomenal scribbler. What do they call that?
Cartoonist.
He's a bit of a cartoonist, yeah. And in the margins, he would doodle.
A doodler.
So was I. Uh-huh. And those marginal drawings are very instructive.
I mean, is there a doodle of a beetle? In a structure.
There's a doodle of a man with legs splayed in a triangular prison. And in our play, we have a fence, and it creates a triangle prison. And that's an image that's very resonant in our performance.
What's been revealed to you as Alan in your life from playing these characters?
Well, the play makes me reflect on my own parenting, my parentage. I think that it makes me reflect on society and authority, and the way in which we all are in some kind of an oppressive relationship with the powers that be. And oftentimes, it's inscrutable, it is absurdist, labyrinthine, and that is the Kafkaesque world that he seemed to identify with so strongly. And the world is increasingly becoming that. So it makes me think about the ways in which I'm a small cog in a very complex wheel that I don't nearly understand.
Thinking metamorphosis there for some reason, but when you do decide, I don't know if you have, when do you then take such a powerful bit of work, so history laden in terms of this icon, and lay it aside and do the next thing?
Well, I'm always looking at the next thing, and this is my fourth time in Edinburgh and the third time with this play, but I brought other shows here and I'm constantly creating new pieces, but in a certain sense Kafka has become a odd sort of home base for me.
And has it influenced your other work?
I think so. Through this play, we developed an aesthetic of minimalism, of simple props and elements becoming like a Rubik's Cube of possibilities. I love that about the theater, that objects are mutable, that the space is mutable. It became a cavern and a keyhole, depending on how we relate to it. And the audience takes that journey with me. So that is an element of this play that I really try to bring into other work.
Final question. So if I happen to have been at the premiere of this a few years back and I came and saw it now, am I seeing the same thing or a fairly big development of it?
This performance changes, not just in terms of where I do it in the world, because it means different things in different places, where authority is related to differently. Can you imagine the difference between doing this in Iceland or Turkey? Those were radically different experiences, doing it in Germany or South Africa. But there is another element in which it's really new every day, because the audience is a character in it. And increasingly, as both father and son, I appeal to individuals in the audience for a particular reaction. And the way they eyeball me, the way they nod their head or squirm or scowl, affects the play. So it's a constantly evolving piece.
Well, Kafka and Son was a big hit at Prague Fringe, a big hit with our reviewers, so it's a bit of a no-brainer to see at the Edinburgh Fringe. Alan, thanks very much for talking to us.
Thank you.